Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
And welcome to the Arts and Antiques radio program. No, I am not Elizabeth Stewart. She's on assignment. And we're here to share with you some very interesting insights from our guest here on the program, Claudia Hoag McGarry. And she has an interesting book and title to that book. I wish I had a French restaurant with almond croissant. Pronouncing that correctly. Claudia, welcome. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have this chat with you because as we were sharing off air, there was a beautiful French restaurant or cafe in San Diego that my first wife and I would visit when we went to SeaWorld a couple of times, staying with some family friends. And that would be so nice, wouldn't it? I mean, I know it's a little warm out there for some folks, but if you're by the water, especially the ocean with a slight breeze, it can be very, very comfortable.
It's all about comfort.
It's all about comfort. Absolutely. Absolutely right. Now, I'm curious as to the time frame in which this book takes place, because as I scroll through and look at some of these pictures look like they go back quite a ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's a memoir. I had written a memoir once before in the voice of a dog, but it only kind of pertained to one part of my life, and that was in New Orleans as a child, and I had it in the voice of a dog called Beignet and Grandpa Lay. That came out in 2015, I think. So this is very different because I divided it into four parts, which are pretty much the four parts of my life so far. Yeah.
Now, the book is made up, obviously, of photographs. So then my next question is going to be, is this something that will be put together in an audible format?
Yes. So that's really exciting to me. I'm doing this all myself with the help of Sam. I think her name is DeRossi. She's a well-known stage manager in and about Santa Barbara, and she's just a doll, and she's been helping me. So she's helping me self-publish this one, and then we're going to record the audible because we're figuring out how to do it. But that probably won't be for, you know, a week or something. We're doing it one step at a time. After this, we have to do the Kindle download and then the audible.
Mm. Now, this, you say your memoir, it's like, I'm looking here and it's like, the cast of characters. And there's Claudia and Paul, your husband, Shauna, your daughter, Kevin, your son, Casey, who is also one of your sons, and your auntie, Max and Neil. And the reason I skipped over, we'll call it G, is because I'm not sure, I want to say Beignet, but I'm not sure it has to do with the name of your dog, fictional dog.
Yeah, my dog's name is Harvey, and I based Beignet on Harvey. Harvey's now 16 years old and blind and deaf, but when I wrote that book, he was spry and young, so...
Well, Beignet, I was like, okay, she mentioned the Big Easy in New Orleans and all this kind of stuff and a French cafe. So maybe the N-E-T isn't Big Net.
Right, right.
So I guess I jump back to my own personal learning and so forth. Now, I wish I had a French cafe with almond croissant is dedicated to your brother.
Right.
Basically he's a dry kind of funny. That's the dry wit, as some people would like to say, with a kind hearted, very humble, who is kind and very humble. And he is incredibly smart. Mm-hmm. You have a picture of him in Malibu. Is that where
he is? No, in Maui.
I'm sorry, Maui. I beg your pardon. Was he vacationing or living in
Mount? Oh, no, he was vacationing there. He's retired now, but he worked for Disney for years doing something with computers because he's too smart in that way for me. We text almost daily. We're just close friends. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a part of this that makes me think of, it's not really a book per se. It'd probably be more classified as a pamphlet. Something my mother put together. Now, she's 91 this year. And she put together some years ago, probably 10 or 15 years ago, a book of genealogy of the family.
Oh, cool.
And there's a certain element of that in your book here because of the process you go through by taking us chronologically through the years, starting with 1957
yeah,
through to roughly the present.
Yeah, now.
Mm-hmm. Now, she says, now, 2025, 2026.
Many years, yeah.
What inspired you to put this together?
My daughter is very intuitive, and I've been writing screenplays for years, optioning a few. And last year, my partner and I finally sold one, but it still hasn't gone into development. So it's just so many frustrations when you leave things in other people's hands. And my dad, before he died, wrote a book of humorous essays and personal essays called I Wish I Had a Porch. So I had started writing essays when my kids were little about interesting experiences that we went through, not like majorly important experiences, just everyday mundane things. And I started thinking, and Shauna said to me, Mom, just put your essays in a book. They're really good. And Shauna's not one to make suggestions or give you a lot of compliments. She's pretty reserved. So I kind of cling to anything she might say positive like that. So I thought, oh my God, Shauna said I should write a book of essays. So I did. I started to put them all together just a few months ago. And then the more I did it, the more I thought, you know what? I'm going to put them in chronological order because I have some from New Orleans in the 50s, some from New Orleans in the 60s, like when John Kennedy died. I remember that day. Then we moved to New York for a brief period of time. And then we got to LA in 1969. When I was just 12 years old, and it was like a culture shock to me coming from little safe Catholic New Orleans. So I just thought I have kind of an interesting background, both geographically and personally. My parents were writers. They met each other on the New Orleans States Item. My mom wrote the Catholic column. My dad wrote the crime column. So it kind of gives you a peek into their personalities. And the more I started working on it, the more I got excited and I thought, wow. Mm-hmm. And then in the 70s, I lived in Sherman Oaks, which was just like the hub of television. I mean, everybody I met was either the wife of a TV star or was a TV star, or they were going on set with their parents for the weekend. I babysat for people that were famous. I mean, I remember one day I went down the block to babysit for somebody I didn't know. And it ended up being Walter Cronkite's son and his family, because I saw pictures of Walter Cronkite around the living room, just that kind of thing. And it wasn't like I was that impressed with those people. It was just in my life all around me, So I thought I have some interesting stories to tell about all that. And then after that, when I got married and we moved to Santa Barbara, being a mom is a rude awakening into reality. It's beautiful, but it's also like you're not a kid anymore and you have to be selfless and blah, blah, blah. So there's all those stories. And then there's the whole aging technique, which you have to kind of weave through as you see friends. Some get sick, some die. You try to keep your health together. You have more empathy than you've ever had. You have more appreciation for every day of the week, every moment of the day. So I just thought, I have some cool things to say. So let's say them. There's my answer.
Interesting. And I'm thinking that when we decide we're going to create a book.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously do. We have something that we want to say. It is probably my favorite review of my book was by my mother. And she texted it to me because apparently they don't let relatives leave reviews. Be that as it may, she says, congratulations, offered some suggestions, but then said, I learned things about you I always wanted to know.
Oh.
Have there been people who kind of feel that way about you now that they've had an opportunity to, well, of course, the book, I'm sure you've had some people preview it before its release, but is that sort of a reaction that you've gotten from some folks?
No, I've only had one or two good friends look at it. And my friend Meg said to me, what are you doing with this? Because I wasn't ready to publish it. And she said, self-publish it. Get it out there. It's really good. And I thought, and Meg's really smart. She's a good friend. She was an educator for years. So then she kind of inspired me to move forward with it. But then I did the whole, oh, I'll check into getting an agent. I'll take a webinar on this. I'll listen to a podcast on this. And it just frustrated me so much because I've had too many years of being told to wait. Hurry up and wait. Wait, wait, wait. And I thought, you know what? Forget it. I'm an Aries. My son Kevin this morning as he walked past the house said, you're insatiable. Because I was asking him for the lyrics to one of his songs that I love called Songs About the War, because it pertains so much to what's going on right now. And he just goes, what is it for? And I said, I want to post the lyrics. I want to put the lyrics in my book because I love the lyrics. And he says, oh my God, because I'm meeting 300 kids like in 10 minutes because he works at the Presidio. He's the director of something or other at the Santa Barbara Trust for Historic Preservation. So they were 300 third graders come today at the Presidio. So he said, I can do that later, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I just thought, I'm going to put whatever I want in here, and I'm not going to wait for some agent on Park Avenue who won't get back to me for 8 months, who's going to tell me, oh, you can't include that. Oh, no, that doesn't look good. Oh, no, that font is not allowed. I'm done with people telling me what to do, period.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the suggestions, and they were only a couple, only two, that she made were actually very good ones. And
your mom, that's great.
Well,
I should get her to read my book.
I did and didn't do it because of her, because when I looked at it, considering her recommendation, I'm going, no, it does look better the way she is suggesting, you know, and so I give my mother credit on that one for sure. This is a book that you have put together. What about permission from family and friends in terms of including certain stories that are not so much about them, but that include them? Because I keep thinking about that in terms of my book and, gee, do I want to write another one that's a little bit more personal, maybe a little more chronological and so forth? And, okay, this is how I remember our trip to Sedona when I climbed up the wall at the Red Rock Church and I fell off of it. My mother said to me, Richard, get down from there or you're going to fall. Well, I did. And it knocked the wind out of me. Didn't hurt me per se, other than maybe a little bit of my pride. But is that really how the story went? Am I remembering it correctly? Did my mother really say those things? What about those aspects of writing about family and friends? Did you consult them? Or is this the disclaimer is, this is my memoir and this is how I remember it.
No, you know, I talked to my husband about it. And I said, do you think I have to ask the kids? And he said, most of those stories are when they were children and they're funny and they're cute and stuff like that. And the photographs, I haven't asked my children, but I've mainly asked friends if I can use those photographs. Cause I want their permission. You know, like, for example, my friend Deidre McAveedy, her dad directed a bunch of the Gunsmoke episodes and we were really good friends. And so I wrote her yesterday and I said, Deidre, can you send me some pictures, you know, of when we used to go on set with your dad? And she said, absolutely. And I said, are you sure you don't mind? She goes, you can use any of those. She goes, I'm his daughter. You can use them. So, yeah, I have gotten some permission from some people. I think I do have to ask my friend Jim Jeske, who I just wrote about this morning. And it was about listening to the Grateful Dead and getting stoned at one of the concerts. So I do, you know, he's in business. He's like a big businessman in Atlanta. Yeah. I think I just need to write to him and say, do you mind if I reveal like how weird we were in the 70s? I mean, it was so long ago. So he may say no. And all that, because what I wanted to do in this book is be ruthfully, I mean, just be really honest. So I don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, get someone angry, but I also want to be honest. So, you know, there you go. Mm.
There's one picture in particular that drew my attention only because of the caption. And it's the one with your two twin sons, basically in Dublin at Trinity College. And this goes back some, well, as we're talking, 16 years. And the reason why, of course, Elizabeth and I, we've talked about this on countless occasions and programs, and my affinity for Ireland. My present wife and I, we've been there twice, but it's been 22 years, and it's like, when are we going to get back there? Is the question my wife asks.
Got to get off the mountain and go back.
Got to get off the mountain and go back. Yeah, I may have to take out some of the equity in the house and do that, and hopefully the way things are going. But can you share with us a little bit about your travels with your family, obviously to Ireland? Now, was this a trip that the two of them took by themselves, or was this a family excursion?
No, when they graduated from Fordham University in New York, that was a family trip to honor their graduation. And when we got there, you know, we went all over Ireland, and Trinity just happened to be that picture that day. And Kevin had to leave because he was going on the Camino de Santiago walk with his teacher from Fordham and some friends. So he didn't get to stay in Ireland as long as we did. I think we were there 10 days. I don't remember exactly. But yeah, so that was like the day of or the day before that he left. And they just looked so Irish in that picture, don't they?
They do.
So I just took that picture and, you know, that was that. So,
yeah. By the way, speaking of trips to Ireland, because we talked about it before, and this was actually the first trip in 2002, right before Christmas and into New Year's, we talked about how long we were going to stay, and we both agreed we were not going to stay any less than 2 weeks, because we felt, my God, we just got here. Now we got to turn around and go home, another 15-hour flight back to Phoenix. Exactly. So we stayed for 2 weeks. And then we went the second time. The first time flew into Dublin, the second time into Shannon. The moment we got into the rental car, it felt like week number three of a month-long trip. It was like we picked up right where we left off.
Wow.
What are some of the other places that you and your family sojourned on the globe, not just in the United States, but around the world, in terms of some of the experiences that we can share in the book, as well as some of those you can share with us here, in terms of how these trips changed you and your perception of not only yourself, but of even of the world and of other people who, you know, are, you know, they're living lives in different cultures, and some of the, shall we say, the education that you received about these other cultures.
I mean, my daughter was sweet enough to take me to Italy, not once, but twice, because she was killing it as a TV writer for a long time. And so I was so like lucky, because one time we took a trip all around Italy, and the next time we went to a wedding in Tuscany, you know. And I think when I say these words, I think, oh my God, I mean, how lucky have I been, you know, especially just to spend time with my daughter alone. So much fun. And then I love to go to New York. My son Casey and I go almost, we've gone almost every year for 15 years to the New York Film Festival. And, you know, we splurge, we put it on a credit card, we do whatever we can do to do it. And we go and we watch all the debut films. I have a little story in there about one time when we saw a Penelope Cruz one that he actually might get mad if he sees that I put it there. And I'm debating, I'm debating if I'm going to tell him or not, because, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, New York, I love. I mean, it's interesting because even though I'm from New Orleans, I went to New Orleans last year because my son-in-law produced that movie, James Carville, Winning is Everything. He's a documentary producer. And so we were so interesting. And I was born and raised in New Orleans, and I've been back many times. But we stayed at an Airbnb, like down in the French Quarter. And James Carville and his wife had just moved. They had moved from some other house on further away, or a farm or something. And we were getting in our minivan to go somewhere with my little grandson. It was just my daughter, my son-in-law, myself, my grandson. And we look up, and there he is coming out of his apartment or house, which is right next door. I mean, and Graham, my son-in-law, had worked with him closely for 3 years on that. And we went to the premiere and everything. And there he is next door. And Graham didn't know where he had moved. So just such a small world. But anyway, I liked New Orleans, but it was different for me. I remember the New Orleans of Commander Palace and Andrew Jackson and, you know, the older restaurants, Brennan's, that my aunts and my grandma and my uncles that we'd all meet at. And now you go and it's like the best restaurant you can go to, you know, might be a Middle Eastern one. Or, I mean, since Katrina, there's a lot of newness in New Orleans and it's wonderful, but it's not my New Orleans. It's different. And plus my grandma's gone, my aunt, my great aunts are gone. So I love the visit, but New York, on the other hand, holds more for me now. And we go every year. And I always stay at the Washington Square Hotel because my dad worked there when he was young. He grew up in Brooklyn and he loved the bar there. They have a nice bar. I don't drink, but he did. And so I have a sentimentality about being right there. Plus my favorite movie is Harry Met Sally, you know, and that's in the movie with the arch at Washington Square Park. Plus I dropped my daughter off there 1 month before 9/11 at the archway. So I just have all this connection to New York. I just love it. I thrive there. I like to write there. I go to plays. So talking about culture and places, you know, I think I'm old enough now that I've been to enough cities, and I've been to Mexico, I've been to France, I've been to Spain. I've been to enough places that I'm fine now with just going to New York. I'm fine to go to New York every fall. And if Casey wants to meet me, or if one of my other kids wants to meet me, great. Let's do it.
You know, I find these conversations fascinating because somehow I managed to find a connection. I was in New York City. My best friend of 53 years, he's since passed, he invited myself and my first wife to come visit. So we came visit for a year, for a week, not a year, a week. it felt like a year sometimes, but it was loads of fun. Unfortunately, my first wife, she ended up getting sick from eating something. I don't know what it was, but she survived. I remember a Friday afternoon and we were walking down Fifth Avenue and people, and it was close to, it was right around 5 o'clock. And the excitement that was in the air was just incredible, right? So I am looking around. By the way, my friend told me, he says, "Will you stop looking up at the buildings? You look like a tourist." To which I turned to him and I said, "I am a tourist. Lighten up." But I'll tell you what was so extraordinary for me was the fact that I had two feelings about the excitement in the air. One was the exhilaration of all of these people. They're heading out of the buildings, heading off for the evening, maybe going to dinner, going to a bar, going home, or what have you. And then there was the sad side of it, going, most of these people are oblivious of one another because True. They're in their own little cocoon, their own little world, as they're walking. I mean, yeah, there was still traffic, but that was the mixed emotion I had, was that exhilaration of New York City, the city that never sleeps. I believe that's correct, as opposed to Las Vegas.
There's an essay in my book that my son wrote that I included called The City That Never Sleeps.
Well, folks are going to have to get a copy of your book. And by the way, how can they do that? I know that as of our conversation, as you and I are talking right now, but when it is released, where will they be able to find it?
So for now, I'm just going to put it on Amazon, and it'll be, you know, or through me. I'm going to buy a few copies myself to give out, and, you know, and my big thing is just hoping for word of mouth that people like it and tell a friend and know that they can go do this if they want to do it. It's not that hard. And but I'm really excited. It's going to be released tonight. I'm going to dump it in there tonight, get my friend Sam over here, and we're going to finally do it, because I keep changing it. I keep adding. I added a whole chapter like just this morning about friends. But, you know, I keep going, wait a minute, this is my, I have more to say. I want to say this and I want to say that. And it's so ridiculous because I'm thinking, do people even want to hear what I have to say? I mean, that's the golden question, you know? So, but I'm having fun and I'm loving it. And then I'm going to go back to work, which is coincidentally, I have a script being looked at that has a subplot about Cesar Chavez, and I've got to go in now and change the whole subplot on the screenplay because of all the allegations now against him and how sad and tragic that all is. So anyways, it's just nice to have a book that's mine, that I can do what I want, that I don't have to change unless I want to, and that I'm really excited about. So Amazon for now.
Well, that's very cool. That's very cool. And we encourage people to go to Amazon and get a copy of the book. And once again, the title of the book, which I love. I also love the way that the photographs and the pictures, whether they're drawings or actual photographs, are placed in this book. It's as if you tried to glue them in, but they curled up on both sides. But it has a great effect. And it's, I wish I had a French cafe with almond croissant as we talk with our very special guest here on the program. And her name is Claudia, and we'll go with Hoag McGarry. And we will continue here on Arts and Antiques as I sit in for Elizabeth, who is on assignment, and we'll be back with more here on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, streaming live at AM 1290, KZSB.com. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Arts and Antiques radio program. I am Reverend Dr. D, and I also go by Richard Dugan. I don't have a nom de plume, but some people might call it mud, but that's okay. I can live with that. One of the things that I find interesting about our guest and her book, which is available at Amazon, is, of course, I wish I had a French cafe with an almond croissant, and I'm doing my best to make sure I pronounce that correctly, ladies and gentlemen. I find that also very interesting, the way we have anglicized, not anglicized, but anglicized a lot of words from around the world since we just celebrated St. Patrick's Day. And of course, we had a little conversation earlier about Ireland and about some of the words they use in Ireland and some of the customs and culture that they have there. And one of my favorites, of course, is, and it's a verb, ladies and gentlemen, not a noun, crack. Or the crack. And it's, of course, talking about the ambiance in the pubs.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And I love that word. And quite honestly, I love it so much that I could go back to Ireland, sit at a table or sit at the bar with a pint of Guinness and just listen. Not for any specific conversations, but for the conversations that are going on and the people who are speaking with that wonderful, we call it an accent, Irish accent. That's what I love about going to Ireland. And by the way, I met a man at the radio station some years ago who was from Northern Ireland. And I told him, oh my gosh, I love that country. My wife and I, it's been a long time since we've been there. And he says, I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is it that you love so much about Ireland? And I said, the people. Mm. It's the people.
Yeah.
I also would like to think that the same thing is true of here in the United States. I don't want to say America because that encompasses North, Central, and South. But when there are people in need, others step up. We saw it when the country was shut down during COVID. We've seen it during earthquakes and fires and hurricanes and tornadoes and whatever natural disaster you want to name. People step up. It is just that, to me, that is the human nature. And I would take it that in your travels with your family or even by yourself, you've noticed the same thing about the people across this wonderful, not just country, but across the globe and these other countries you've been to, is they're there for one another when there's need.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my husband's family is from Northern Ireland. I don't know the exact place, but anyway. And then my mother-in-law is from, I think her family was from Southern Ireland. And my dad has Irish roots. I'm mostly French from my mom's side of the family. That's mm-hmm. why I like the whole French cafe thing. And I love French, yeah. you know, food. I love French design and architecture. I love everything French. And there's a little restaurant on Fifth Avenue. You were talking about Fifth Avenue. It's called Claudine's. Of course, I like the name. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got my initial almond croissant and cafe au lait. But then I ventured farther into other parts of New York and found a few other French cafes with almond croissants. So that's when I decided to name it that. I Wish I Had a Bigger Porch, because my dad's book is I Wish I Had a Porch. But I decided that I don't wish I had a bigger porch. I'm fine with the one I have. It's not very big, but it's just fine. So then I thought, what do I really wish? And it was, I wish I had a French cafe, but I wouldn't want to work. I would just want somebody else to manage the whole thing. And then I would just want the latte or cafe au lait and the almond croissant.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think I interviewed a gentleman who wrote a book called Always at Choice. And it was similar to my book, although this was dealing more with the loss of a loved one or a trauma in one's life. And he told me, I was sharing with him a situation that I'd gone through. And he says, I want you to go to page 149 of my book, and I want you to read that 2 pages. It's just a short little thing. And I read it. And to paraphrase, there's a gentleman that's there. He's visiting from the United States. He's vacationing in this small little quaint fishing village on the coast of Mexico. And at the end of the pier is this man who is just pulling in, if you will, in his little small fishing boat. And the guy walks up to him and he notices that he has like 3 yellowtail tuna in his boat. And he says, well, hello, how are you? And they had a little chat there. And he says, so how long did it take you to catch those three fish? He goes, oh, not very long. And the gentleman says, well, you know, maybe you should go back out there and fish some more. You get some more fish in and you'll be able to provide for your family and so forth, because that's what the fish were for, was for his family. He right. says, well, no. I want to go home. I want to play with my kids and have a little siesta with my wife, and then we'll go down to the village, and I will have a little wine and play my guitar and have a little sing and just you know, and so forth. He says, yeah, but you know, if you go out there and you go fish some more, you bring in more money, and then you can maybe get a couple, three fishing boats going out there, and you begin to grow the business and to the point where now you don't need to sell to the middleman. You can open your own cannery and so forth and so on. And then he says, well, what would I do after that? And he says, well, you might move to New York, Los Angeles, you know, and grow the business even more and so forth. And then maybe even move to New York City, you know, and so forth. And you'll be selling, and then you get your business going. Pardon me. And then you'll have an IPO and so forth. And he says, well, what would I do then? He says, well, then once you do that, you'd sell your business for a couple of $1 million. You know, and so forth. He says, well, a couple of $1 million. So, well, but what would I do then? He says, well, then you'd retire, and then you'd go move to a small little fishing village where you would play with your kids and have a siesta with your wife, and then go into the village and have a glass of wine and play your guitar and just enjoy your life. The reason why my friend told me that story and wanted me to read that was because of the thing I had been going through, where I was getting pressured to do some things and make some decisions in a very quick manner. And we live here in Twin Peaks in this beautiful house that we just bought. And it's like, why would you have that middle part when you already have that which you're going to end up at in the first place?
Right, right. I get it. Yeah.
What do you think about the lifestyle in the United States, the mindset of earning all of the money that we can versus some of the other cultures around the world, that they don't have the ulcers and the high blood pressure and the high blood sugar, all of that wonderful stuff that we, you know, kind of take for granted. And yet they're living their best life, and yet they don't have five or six or seven figures in the bank. But what they have is five or six or seven good friends and family and all of that kind of stuff. To me, that seems like what your book is kind of sharing, is that community.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, God, when I look back and I think all the money we've raised or earned, my husband and me, and where has it gone? And I don't know, you know, you do kind of stop and think about that. But when you've raised your kids somewhere and they're there, and you don't want to be, we don't want to be far from our kids. We're close to them. Our grandson now, he's four, he lives in LA. We don't want to be far from him. We're very much a part of his life. So I do think Southern California is ridiculously expensive and stressful for people. And you do stop and wonder, is this worth it? And I don't know, that's a really tough question. It's really tough. One of my neighbors has a house down in Baja, like in kind of a remote area. And I mean, he might feel a little unsafe right now, but in general, he goes there all the time and just loves it and says it's so much less expensive and it's so peaceful. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say to that. It's kind of a puzzle. It's a puzzle to know what to do. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, costs today are not fair to the younger generation. They can't afford to buy a house. Gas is at the roof, you know, hits the roof. And, you know, I remember my very first apartment in Toluca Lake when I was like 18 was $375 a month. And my friend and I split it. And I drove in a VW over Beverly Glen to UCLA every day. It took me 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, no traffic. And those were days where you could actually put $10,000 down on a house that was $100,000. You know, I don't want to get into all this, but it kind of makes me crazy because I have kids in their 30s, you know? And
yeah.
So.
Well, I know that that when we had to do find a new place to live back in June of 25, my first thought was, and this kind of goes into a little bit more of a metaphysical or spiritual aspect here for us. My mind was looking for a new place to rent. I wasn't thinking about buying. And especially because of what I had heard, you know, what I've been hearing in the news at that time about house prices and this and that and the other thing. And the next thing I know, we're moving into a house that, you know, and I love to put it this way. This the house that we're buying is valued at around, and this is, I love saying it this way, $250,000. All right. It just sounds so much better than the actual number, right?
Yeah.
Around $250,000. And it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
But we put that out there that we needed to find a, this is what we put out. We needed to find a place to live.
Yeah.
So throughout your life, and as you share in this book, I wish I had a French cafe and an almond croissant. What about the journey that you have taken with by yourself, but also with all of the other cast of characters that you share with us in your book, in terms of maybe looking around going, how did I get here? I like it. Wow.
I mean, I think we were kind of naive when we moved here. We moved here in 89. We gave up good jobs in Los Angeles and just, we had taken our kids here on little vacations and stayed at a place called the King's Inn down on Castillo Street many years ago. And we would come down, take them to this little hotel, we'd swim, we'd go to the beach. And it was so idyllic, you know, and we thought we could move to Santa Barbara. No problem. We have jobs in LA. You know, I had a job. I was actually the principal of an elementary school that was, with the Good Shepherd Shelter for Abused Children. And my father-in-law had met the nuns in Chicago and brought them to LA and helped them buy the real estate. My father-in-law's father, I think, buy the real estate in Los Angeles to set up this shelter, this long-term shelter for abused women and children. And I had this amazing job working there, loved it, loved the people, loved the kids, families. And all of a sudden we were like, oh, and there was so much crime and gang violence and weird things happening in LA those years. Like we lived in Burbank and we could hear helicopters over our heads looking for gang members. And we were so freaked out with three small children. And we just decided, let's go. So we sold our house and moved to Santa Barbara. And I'm telling you, that was not an easy feat. I mean, it took a while to get our footing here. And we both got jobs teaching at colleges, got our kids in school, you know, and from there it's history. But yeah, what a journey. And I look back now and I think, what if we had stayed in Los Angeles? What would be different? First of all, my sons wouldn't be surfers like they are now. That's one. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just a tough call to look at your life and see if you made all the right decisions and why you did it. And we just thought it was beautiful here. That's why we came.
So. Wonderful. We're talking with Claudia Hogue McGarry about her book, and we hope you'll get a copy. Go to Amazon and get a copy of the book. It's entitled, I Wish I Had a French Cafe and an Almond Croissant here.
It's so funny. I watched on YouTube how to say it and how to spell it correctly, and they had all these ways that you say it wrong, but you say it right. So good for you.
Well, thank you very much. And this is the Arts and Antiques radio program with Elizabeth Stewart, who is on assignment, and we'll be right back. And And as we come to the close of this program, Claudia, this is fascinating. I'm thrilled at the opportunity to have talked with you about this and to have thank you so much for sending me a PDF of what you have created. Odds are, though, by the time it's released, the version that I have will be outdated.
I'm promising tonight, some friends are asking, I can't keep doing this. I can't live like this. I'm working like 8 or 12 hours a day. I'm supposed to be partly retired. It's insanity.
Well, I will tell you that when working on my book, I was doing the same thing. I was adding something here, and someone said, "No, why don't you just save that for the second edition?" I said, "Really? What do you mean second edition? Really? Oh, okay." But I applaud you for your, because it does take courage to put yourself out there. It really does, and I applaud you for doing that. It's not easy for a lot of folks, but with my program, Tell Me Your Story, we're going to be talking with a gal who's deals with publishing companies, and how important it is to get our story out there, because it could be very valuable to a lot of people. And so that's why I applaud you for doing that. And thank you for taking the time.
Oh, of course. I just hope it gives people pause to do it themselves if they want to, or, you know, courage or whatever. One thing I've never lacked is courage. You know, stupidity, yes, maybe. Not courage. I mean, because I wrote and produced 8 plays, never having taken a playwriting class or any kind of writing class. And I was so thrilled with every single production, and the community was so supportive. I always had full houses, and I'm taking a break from play production now to be working on this. So,
well, again, we thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program to share about your book. Once again, I'll just tell you folks, it's a combination. It's not just a book on with text and chapters and all that. It's a picture book too. You're going to see a lot of great stuff. I wish I had a French cafe with an almond croissant. And again, the author is Claudia Hogue McGarry. And Claudia, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And I thank you folks for tuning in and listening in to the program. And we hope that you will get yourself a copy. Go to Amazon. And until next week, this has been Richard Dugan sitting in for Elizabeth Stewart here on the Arts and Antiques radio program here on AM 1290 and FM 96.9 and streaming live at AM 1290, KZSB.com.